It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
And the second half of the program live from Aggieland. And what an afternoon this has been. Auburn and Texas A&M tomorrow. We have a nice group of students here in the heat. And I mean in the heat. Ryan McGee joining us. The heat index just hit 104. They're saying tomorrow morning will be the hottest game in Aggieland since 2007.
Because we're here.
Yeah,
it's because we're here.
I dropped by the show meeting, and they mentioned that the show will be on the field the final 30 minutes. I've got an early flight. I may not be able to make that.
All those years I covered NASCAR, we would say the only way to make it rain in the desert, like in Phoenix and in Las Vegas, was to bring us to town for a race. And I felt like the hottest day of my life was ACC Nation. We were in Charlotte.
Oh, yeah.
It was Labor Day weekend, Tennessee, maybe West Virginia.
That
was a hot day. Marcus Spears, I'm convinced, didn't even know what he was saying anymore. At one point, he just blurted out in the middle of making a point, the earth is hot. I'm like, okay.
I don't remember who the producer was. They said, just, you can't take your coat off. And I said, okay, just try me. I took the coat off.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm now, you guys are wearing, like, the flight suits.
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyhow, it wouldn't be Texas if it wasn't hot in September, and I'm excited to be here. But this park is amazing, by the way.
It is. Yeah, we just had the people that helped design it and fund it and build it, and it is truly remarkable. So let me get to some – we haven't spent much time nationally, and this is a monster weekend. I realize there are games other than Coach Prime tomorrow, with all due respect, as we say in the trade. What about this game in South Bend? Major, it feels like a playoff game, Ohio State and Notre Dame. I know you've been writing about it.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting to me, because what strikes me about this game is kind of like Texas-Alabama a couple weeks ago. They've never really played.
This is only maybe the
seventh time that Ohio State and
Notre Dame
have played.
Michigan used to play Notre Dame all the time.
Not Ohio State. And same with Texas and Alabama. I don't think they played for like the eighth time. And so it's crazy to me when you take programs that are easily among like the top 10 most recognizable brands in the history of the sport, and not even in bowl games have they played much. So it's a statement game for both. I think Ohio State is way better than, for whatever reason, people are giving them credit for. Ryan Day needs to win a big game. You know, his losses are to Alabama and to Michigan and to schools, that, you know, playoff losses. He needs a win over a big team, a ranked team, and a win over the road would be great. And for Notre Dame, this is kind of the are-they-actually-back game. You know, they're a top-10 team. I think they might have the best offensive line in the country. They have a quarterback that we all know from Wake Forest, Sam Harwell.
Is it my imagination, Ryan, but did Notre Dame get better when they lost last year's starting quarterback and the offensive coordinator?
Yeah.
No names,
but it is interesting how that works. But no, it's – and they're wearing the green jerseys, Paul.
Oh, are they?
I wrote a story for ESPN.com this week about the green jerseys. I knew about the 1977 Trojan horse game against USC when Dan Devine pulled out the green jerseys, and they wore green jerseys for the next couple of years. Then I thought it was just – I thought that was kind of it. And then when I did the research, I realized Newt Rockne was the first coach to put his team in green jerseys, only occasionally, because back in the 20s, all the teams looked the same.
Coach?
Yeah. I think it was 1921 when they said that he put his receivers in green jerseys so that the quarterback could spot them, because everybody back then just wore black and blue and white and, you know, gray.
Let me get to another team we have not talked about, and that's about design. You're a Tennessee graduate, and the Tennessee Vols had one of the worst performances I've ever seen last week in the Swamp. Maybe it should have been expected, but describe where this program is right now. I realize easy game this week, but they will get back in action quickly.
I like also, by the way, how whenever I'm on the show, you say, and Ryan, you are a Tennessee.
Well, I'm neutral. I don't wear my university on my sleeve.
Do I? We both went to school there.
Okay.
I just want to make
but
sure.
But I'm asking the question. It's not about me.
No, it was. It's funny because on the surface it was shocking. If you took out the names and you just looked at all the momentum going in and then last year and the point spread and everything else, you would have said, okay, this team A is definitely going to beat team B,
right,
even though it's on the road. The last time Tennessee won at the Swamp was 22 years ago?
Yeah.
Almost a quarter century ago. My daughter's 18, has never seen Tennessee win in the Swamp.
So I thought they had won about 6 years ago.
Me too.
And I turned off the game. That was when Butch Jones was there. I found out that Tennessee had lost. The game was over.
No, it was really shocking. I think Joe Milton has a long ways to go.
Yeah.
I think that obviously we know his physical potential. You know, he's an internet sensation because he can throw it over the mountains and all that
good
stuff. But at the end of the day, he has to take care of business on the field in a big game. And we saw flashes of that at the end of last year when he got pressed back into service because of Hendon-Hooker's injury. But you got to win these games. And so it's, you know, take care of UTSA and then, you know, be careful because last year South Carolina snuck up on them.
True.
And wins Bryce, and I think South Carolina's probably better than people realize. So that's
you told me earlier you were heading to Colorado, and I realize you haven't covered college football as long as I have because nobody has. But try to put some historical perspective on what we are watching with Coach Prime. Is this a media fascination? Is it real? Does it go away after two losses? What is it?
I think that it's him, number one. I wrote about this for SportsCenter last week. You know, if you're my age, and I'm a few years younger than Dion, but I can remember clear as a bell in high school running back to the television on a Saturday night just to watch SportsCenter to see what Dion had done that day. And he was in college. I saw him play against Clemson in the rain. And as
yeah,
I was,
but if they were 0-3, that wouldn't be germane
right
to this conversation.
But you take Dion and the attention that he was already receiving because he's Dion.
Okay.
And the fact that he turned it around so quickly in his first, you know, head coaching job, and then you add that to winning the first couple games. But the reality is Colorado State's awful. You know, Colorado State and Colorado were both in the top three of my bottom 10 a year ago. So it was a great win, but it really wasn't a great win. It was a thrilling win.
Why are so many people interested in it, though?
Because it's him.
Okay.
I mean, because Dion. He's fascinating. He's always been fascinating. And what's interesting to me now is that I feel like there are as many people that are rooting for them to lose against Oregon this weekend because they rooted against Dion in Atlanta and they rooted against Dion in San Francisco.
I remember with golf is a bad comparison, but people were either for Tiger or against him. So
yeah,
you watched. Didn't
yeah
matter what he was doing.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like we're doing the same thing here.
My buddy Clinton Yates wrote a story for Anscape this week, and he was in Boulder last weekend, and he made the comparison to the Fab Five at Michigan,
yeah,
and the UNLV TARC teams, and Georgetown basketball.
But those teams were sensational, but they weren't getting the numbers that this
– no.
Maybe in the Final Four, but we're talking about a mundane Saturday night game against Colorado State
right
that nobody in their right mind would have watched if the previous coach –
right,
whatever, whoever his name.
Well, they
is
played. Yeah, you know, they played the year before, and again, both in my bottom ten. So
yeah,
no one cared. But it's Dion, and like those other teams, and it's kind of what Clinton was saying in his piece. Fab Five, Running Rebels, whatever else, they were polarizing.
Right.
Even if you didn't care a thing about them, you took a stance on them, and sometimes that was a cultural line that was drawn, quite frankly. And I think that's happened a little bit with Dion. And so it's going to be really, really interesting to see. I think they're going to get crushed by Oregon. Oregon's better than they are. Now, they might not, because all he's done at this point is prove me wrong like he has his entire career. But the next couple of weeks, then USC comes to town. The next couple of weeks are going to be
tough. Well, I don't think it really matters what happens tomorrow. But I think next week it's a show again.
Yeah. Maybe I should write about that when I'm up there on Monday.
Yeah, because good idea. Because, I mean, you have the biggest name in the game.
Yep.
You have talk about polarizing. Lincoln Riley is well on his way to becoming one of the most polarizing coaches in the country.
You think he would let you think he'd let the two of us cover his games right now?
No, and I wouldn't want to cover one of Lincoln Riley's games right now.
He's
disgusting. For those who don't know what we're talking about, he banned a young reporter out there for doing almost. I mean, listen, I've done plenty of things to get banned in my time.
Right.
This guy was writing a nice story.
He wrote that's just it. Was he? the argument was is that he took an out of context, off the record conversation between a couple players and used it as color.
Yeah,
you know, as a lead in a story. And I read the story and I was like,
it was a positive story.
I'm like, is this it? It's like the play by play guy for the Orioles being suspended. And I went back and listened to what he did. I was like, is that what he said? Because all he did was read stats.
And they've got, you know, USC has one of the premier journalism schools in the country, the Annenberg School, who's dean. Well, I'm not going to go down there, but she's only the wife of the president and the chairman of the company that you work for.
Right. And it's and if you've ever been on that campus and you walk into that building, which I have, it's striking.
Oh, it's amazing.
I mean, it's almost regal. And for the school not to jump up a little more quickly now that's been rescinded.
Pretty disgraceful.
You know, he's back at games now, but just the fact that they went through all that
As far as Lincoln Riley, I'm done with him.
Yeah,
I'll never talk about him again.
You cannot be that thin-skinned and be a head coach at this level, and you just can't. It's just not. Do you think that Nick Saban, in all the years that we've been around him, do you think that Nick Saban would have in his second year said that guy can't come to the next couple games because I don't like the column that he wrote?
I'm thinking. We'll take a short break, Ryan. Thank you very much. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Well, we're back, and Owen Buchanan joining us from Texags and the mayor of College Station, Billy Lucci, joining us. Great to see both of you.
Always, Paul. Thank you.
Thank you.
I mean, I've only been here a couple hours, Owen, but I mean, I'm everywhere I go, there's a Lucci mention. Tell us what it's like to work with this guy.
It's kind of like, I don't know, it's like nothing I've ever experienced before. It's got the most laid-back life.
I mean, usually guys who you know, are writers and turn podcasters, turn entrepreneurs, they're not that well known. But I mean, there is literally no one in the platform of college sports that doesn't know, or more important, have been out late with Billy Lucci.
I know that my first year working here was 2012, and we were in New York for the Heisman ceremony, and we're walking through Times Square, and I swear I heard somebody yell, "Hey, Billy Lucci, it's Billy Lucci." I'm thinking, who is this guy I started working for?
I won't be out late tonight with 11 a.m. kickoff, though.
You'll make up for it tomorrow night.
That is true.
I mean, Billy, I realize we'll talk about A&M in a minute, but I want to talk a little about your career, because you've parlayed a really nice career into something very cool. Take us through a little bit, and what got you into this, and how did you get to where you are?
So shortest version I could do is I was living actually right. You could see my house from here. I was living. I was graduating with an industrial distribution degree.
What does that mean?
It's like kind of a hybrid engineering business.
Oh.
There's a lot of people that do it that make a lot more money than I make doing this. That's for sure. But I think for me, I made the right choice. But it just kind of fit. You know Doug Walker. Are you
sure.
familiar? So Doug was doing a little publication, and for those watching, Doug's been all over the SEC. He's actually just took a job with Florida State.
He was at Alabama. He was Nick Saban's first PR guy.
Yeah, so Doug owned this thing.
He'll be doing a memoir about that one day soon.
That's true. That is very true. And Doug's story is fascinating, but he was doing a small publication owned by some other people, and they said, do you want to do this? And I was living right there across the street with SEC people might not know, but a guy named Shane Leckler, who punted for 20 years in the NFL, and Dan Campbell, who's the coach of the Lions now. And so it was us and another friend of ours, and we're all, I was like, I'm not ready to quite graduate, so I can do this little job in this little print publication. So I took it over, ended up buying it with an old roommate of mine for about, I think we went in $10,000 a piece. And I just kind of saw a vision for it, and there was this website, TexAgs, that was kind of fledgling, and went to them and said, you guys need content, I need a website to, you know, and we went together, and it's, the rest has been history. But I'll tell you what, where it really skyrocketed, it was already doing better than I thought. You know, I thought I'd have to get a real job one day. Where it skyrocketed was when A&M, the first flirtation with the SEC, then when it actually happened, and then, you know, it's been a lot of fun ever since, and we've been growing since. Like
in that space, you're from a little more traditional side, but that space is on fire right now.
It really is. And Paul, as you know, with all this stuff, timing's everything. So I got in right before all these fan sites where every school had three of them, and the networks, there was only rivals back then. And so I got in right before all that. So it was such a big thing for Aggies. And then this fan base is so incredible and loyal and passionate and all those things. And we've been fortunate to never kind of, I love what all these networks are doing and stuff, but we've been independent for this long, and there's some opportunities out there that excite me, but we've been able to stay independent, just, and that's been because of timing.
You know, when you're, as I mentioned, a little more traditional.
Yep. I worked 11 years at the Austin American Statesman, covering both the Texas Longhorns and Texas A&M, and then moved on to Rivals. I was a national college football writer for Rivals, found my way to TexAgs. I always say it's not the most lucrative job I've ever had, but it's the best job I've ever had.
It's not. Well, we can talk raises after this, because he does a hell of a job, as you know, Paul. And
I'm dabbling in the agent business right now, Owen. So usually we ask 15%, but in your case, I'll ask 25% since we're doing this live.
We do need a traditional. Hiring him was one of the best hires of it. Him and David, who hosts our radio show, and doing things that I could never do. But
so what are you doing right now? And you were at the vanguard of this, but as NIL was happening, you grabbed it, and you started bringing players into your side. So tell us about that.
Well, I saw an opportunity for not just the opportunity. We're not going to sit there and make a bunch of money off it. It was opportunity for content. Because as you know, Paul, nowadays these colleges, whether it's Learfield, IMG, they've put such a squeeze and a vice grip on access to players. You know, Myles Garrett came through Texas A&M, and our SIDs are incredible here. He came through Texas A&M. I never sat down and had a long-form interview with him once. Not one time. He's the number one pick in the draft. He's a great, accessible guy. But it just, there was not that kind of access. Not for us, not for newspapers, nobody. And I thought, no one's going to say no if they're, you know, getting paid for these appearances, and there were so many Aggies that wanted to kind of get to know these players more. You know, I sat down with Kellen Mond after his career, 4 years starting quarterback. No one knew him. We sat down for 45 minutes. It changed, I think, every Aggie's opinion of him. And I felt like that was a missed opportunity.
I remember last time we were here, he had just got through saying he was the best quarterback in the SEC and went out and laid an egg that day against Auburn.
Oh, Auburn. Oh, see, you did that right there, didn't you? Hopefully Connor Wigman can atone for that. But, no, so that was – I saw an opportunity there to get content. And right. The fans, you know, the big donor that's going to go cut a $5, $10, $20 million check to A&M, they know where to go. The donors that wanted to say – hey, I want to contribute to NIL, but I'm going to do it $20 a month or $200 a month, $1,500. There was nowhere for them to go. So we started a thing called Stacked, and they came in.
So how many players are you involved with right now?
Well, now we're transitioning into something else.
Oh.
And so we're going to kind of work with the A&M collective, which I think – I don't know their number, but it's an overwhelming percentage. But basically one of the things they'll be doing, the players are coming in and doing not just interviews with us. We're signing them to interview deals, but they're also coming in and doing social media content for us, appearances and events, and
now,
whatever comes
and
up.
As somebody who's been around a couple of years, I mean, when you hear Billy talk about this, I mean, I'm still, like, in shock.
Yeah.
I realize we're 2 years in, but it's – pretty amazing, isn't it, when you think about where we are?
It really is, to get to the point where, and it's just life the way it is now, but essentially, paying for interviews.
Yeah.
But you know, that's where it's taken. I can remember back in the old days, you just called up and said, hey, or sent an email, can I get this guy on Tuesday? But
Billy, you could almost call, when I started covering Alabama, you call a player, there's almost no filter.
Yeah. It was my first.
Now for you, that's never been a problem since Johnny Manziel lived with you, I think.
No, I'll tell you this.
You could interview him at breakfast.
Well, I did that. My first interview, I called Alan Cannon, who's still the SID here. I said, hey, this is Billy Lucci. I took over for Doug Walker on the publication, the Maroon and White Report. I was seeing if I could interview Dan Campbell or Dante Hall. Well, we don't know who you are. You can't do it. I said, well, I tried to explain. Well, it's Doug's. No, we don't know. And I hung up and I said, Dan, come in. He comes in the living room. I interview him. And then I called Dante. And that's how he and I got off. We've been friends for 20 plus years now.
Great.
But, you know, Paul, I don't like NIL. I love the players getting paid. I hate the lack of structure and the lack of continuity across conferences, states, programs. I think the programs that still want to, you know, not do NIL but cheat, it's given them an even easier avenue to do it because it kind of hides under the guise of NIL. It drives me crazy, but my thought process of it was, it's going to be going on, somebody's going to be doing it, and I thought our content could really make a big leap by doing it, so I'm excited.
Okay, we put off talking about
the game,
the Aggies enough. We will do that when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Well, we're welcome back, and we apologize, even though we simply didn't have anything to do with it. But there were some transmission issues. That's the down and short part of it. Let's get back to the conversation. Billy Lucci here and Owen Buchanan. Billy, we were talking about Jimbo Fisher, and we got shorted out. So I don't know if that's a bad omen, a harbinger of things to come, but what are your thoughts on where this program is right now?
I think they're at a crossroads for this season and in year six. But I think, you know, they've been really excited about the team throughout the offseason. I had Connor Wigman on. I've talked to Jimbo, people inside the program. They were really disappointed about what happened at Miami. Not obviously when you lose a game, but just kind of the way they perform. I think they think they're a much better team than that. And, look, they're going to need to be, because I said throughout this offseason this was a – kind of defining season of this tenure. And you look at the schedule right now with Auburn coming in, and you're going neutral Arkansas, Bama, Tennessee don't look like the teams they looked like. And look, A&M hasn't in their one test either. There's a lot of football to be played, but this one Saturday, Paul, this one Saturday feels to me like a must win. And the one against Arkansas, to me, feels like one that could set the whole thing up for a pretty interesting story in Aggieland if they can win these next 8 days.
And the reason that it's essential is you still have road trips to Ole Miss and LSU, who may be at the top of I mean, it is a murderer's row, and Owen, this team can't just be average.
No, but, you know, it's supposed to be hard. It's the SEC. If you wanted it to be easy, you could have stayed where you were. It is kind of a put-up-or-shut-up kind of week and a put-up-or-shut-up kind of year, because you have to ask yourself at what point do you keep waiting for next year to arrive?
Yeah.
And I just parachuted in, so I'm the wrong guy to ask. But, I mean, anecdotally, I still feel support for Jimbo Fisher here.
There is, and there's it's two-sided, right? Like, I do think most of the people that really matter around here think this guy he's a fit for the culture. He was the right hire. You don't have an unending clock to get it done, but that contract, and I said this before, there are some negatives to that contract, but the positive is A&M probably couldn't do what they would normally have done historically, which is – you know, knee-jerk, he's going to get the time. And like Owen said, I think this is the time it has to start really turning around. But it's a loaded roster of talent. But in the NIL era, that can either be fleeting, or you can win a couple games in a row, get Bama here, and it blows up.
And Owen, I ask you this question because the Internet can't afford a Billy Lucci answer. But if the University of Texas keeps going, how does that affect, or does it affect, the calculus here?
I don't know. I mean, obviously it affects it to some degree, but for 10 years, A&M's been comparing itself to LSU and Alabama and Auburn and those kind of programs. So, yeah, you know, having your neighbor 90 miles away doing well, I guess that adds some pressure. But, again, that's been here for 10-12 years, because A&M's been wanting to compete at the same level as LSU, as Alabama. So that's where they're trying to get to.
It's your turn, Mr. Lucci.
I'll say exactly what he said. They've been building, you know, basing, you know, trying to target other more successful programs in the last decade. Texas made a real statement a couple weeks ago. I think where it really matters, Paul, is just going to be that head-to-head game. Whoever's coaching here better beat Texas. Whoever's coaching in Austin better beat A&M. And I think that's where that's really going to be, like, kind of where the you know, rubber meets the road.
I want to throw that schedule up again if we can get the folks back and look at where we are right now. big, you know, touchdown favorite against Auburn. I would imagine it's not going to be too much different next week against Arkansas. And then Alabama unknown, because we don't know what Alabama is going to do tomorrow. Tennessee, I mean, there's at least four, at least three and possibly four games remaining that the Aggies will be an underdog.
You're right. I think there is four. I think you're still going to be an underdog probably to Bama and out on the road at 10. But I also think if, when I look at that schedule, I go LSU at the end, that they could be pretty daunting by then in Baton Rouge. But when I look at that schedule today, I kind of put them aside in that last game. Those other seven SEC games, what I've even seen from A&M so far, even in that loss to Miami where the offense kind of shot, so they still scored 33. We hadn't seen that around here in a while. They've got the quarterback. I see a lot of winnable games. But if I'm a fan or a coach or a player at those other programs, I'm looking at A&M and saying that's a winnable game too. So I think it's TBD, and that's why I think these next 2 weeks are really important, Saturday and Arkansas.
Do you get two wins? And I mean, I hear callers all the time. That's not the best indicator, but Aggies expect to beat Arkansas, don't they?
10 out of 11.
Yeah. I mean, that's,
but rarely is it easy.
Never.
Well, no, but you better win.
Yeah.
And look, that's a game where if you really want to be impressive, if the A&M defense needs to step up these next 2 weeks.
Absolutely.
Auburn's not strong offensively. Arkansas hasn't captured that magic.
One of their best players has been banged up.
Rockets out. Defense needs to step up. And I'd like to see A&M come out, Paul, Saturday and look impressive on offense against an SEC opponent. LSU last year was kind of the outlier. But prior to that, it's been a while since we've seen him do that.
Finally, on Bobby Petrino, I mean, we had Robert Griffin on here earlier, and other people have talked about everything seems to be going really well, Owen. How would you characterize what we've seen in a couple of games with Bobby Petrino?
I think it's really been a best case scenario. I know all offseason, ever since Bobby was hired here, there's all these questions. Well, is he and Jimbo going to be able to coexist? And it's been fine. It's been great. When they lost, it wasn't because of offense. The offense, that offense, those offensive issues, that problem seems to have been, at least so far, it looks like it's been solved. But it's like playing that whack-a-mole game. Once you address one issue, another one seems to be popping up.
And Billy, I mean, in terms of Durkins, what can you say about him so far? Because he does not seem to be the most popular person I've heard from fans.
Yeah, that last year, a lot of that coming out, a lot of three-man front with all these D linemen, A&M has that kind of soured some people. But this year, it was the Miami game with all the talent, particularly up front. I do think he's in a weird place because he's trying to not oversell the pressure and stuff, because I think he knows they're pretty susceptible on the back end for now, but he's got to fix it. There's enough talent. They made a move to Jacoby Matthews, who was a five-star recruit last week at safety. He needs to, I think, start making those moves. And here's my thing. A&M is finally aggressive, and they are the aggressor and the attacker on offense. We have not seen that in a while. I think DJ Durkin needs to take a page from Petrino's book and do that defensively. I don't think sitting back and just kind of playing bend but don't break is going to work against that schedule. I do think A&M might win some games where, hey, if you give up some points, it's okay. Just make some plays and wreak a little havoc.
Billy, Lucci, and Owen, thanks much, guys. So appreciate you holding up here during the transmission issues. We deeply appreciate it. Great conversation.
Thanks always, Paul. Appreciate you, buddy.
We are live in College Station as we continue here. Much more to come as we get ready to change out and say hello to Joni Taylor, the women's basketball coach, about to start her second season. And Coach, great to see you. It's always great to see Joni. Of course, many remember her moving over here from Athens. It seems like I sat with you in Athens a couple of years ago, and you were literally about to give birth. It's great to see you again.
How are you doing?
We're doing great.
You hanging tough out here?
Yeah, you know, I would prefer to be hotter than colder, I can assure you. So this might be my place to move.
Come on.
It's great to see you. I mean, last year was a transition, and you had the, I'd say, unenviable task of taking over for one of the legendary coaches in the game, someone you competed against, but truly it seemed like everyone loved Coach. How was that transition for you?
Really good. You know, Gary Blair is a legend in our game. He just got inducted into the Naismith Hall of Fame. He has been one of the best always at not only caring about what happens at Texas A&M or Arkansas or wherever he was, but just our sport in general. So he's a great ambassador. He welcomed our family with open arms. He's a great supporter of us, and I couldn't be more happy with just how our complete transition was to College Station, and a large part of that was because of him and how welcome he was to us.
You take over a program that has had great success, the expectations are, but a bit of a bump, and, yeah. And now you're trying to get it back, which seems like that would be in your wheelhouse.
You know, it's a place we're comfortable, we're familiar there. We knew that we were taking over a team that was just inexperienced, graduated a bunch of seniors, and so the returners had not played a lot. And so last year was a chance for us to get our legs under us. We talked about just becoming. You know, you don't sow and harvest in the same season. I read a quote today that said, you don't sow and then eat the fruit the same day. You don't plant a seed and eat the fruit the same day. So last year was just a lot of setting the foundation for what it is we want to do. We have some of those players back with a great group of young people and transfers to add to that mix. And so looking forward to just building on what we started last year.
I understand you had a pretty good run in the offseason in the World Cup. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Is there room for all these gold medals?
We're talking about it. You know, I'm really fortunate to have – this is 4 gold medals in 3 years, which is a really, really cool thing. Anytime you get asked to represent your country, I was never going to be good enough as a player to play for USA Basketball, but to be able to do it as a coach, it's funny how that comes back around. So just really humbled by it and was fortunate to be around some really talented players.
What's that experience like? I mean, you've done it as an assistant and now obviously as a head coach. I mean, it seems like in one level it takes you away from what you need to be doing, but on the other hand, you're in the action. Describe what it's like.
Well, it's very comforting for me because our staff has been together for so long. Robert Mosley, we've been together 12 years. Associate head coach Chelsea Newton, 9 years. Meredith Mitchell, 11. So we've got a really seasoned staff. So I'm very comfortable walking away knowing that things are in great hands here. And that allows me to fully concentrate on the task at hand. And you get to see the best on the world stage. And it's a great professional development opportunity for me. And just a chance to, again, be able to see the international game and be on that stage.
Joni Taylor with us. We're talking about the program here in the aftermath of Gary Blair, but it's also I don't think it was possible for the league to get tougher, but it has. I mean, we saw something last year with Coach Volke at LSU emerging, winning it all, turning almost everything upside down. And I know that's great for the SEC. I don't know how great it is for the other coaches now that the league coaching roster looks like a Hall of Fame list.
Well, that's why you come to the SEC, right? You know, I was taking some notes the other day. This is 21 years in the league for me as a player and a coach combined. And I think back to my time as a player and the great coaches we had and the great players we had, and it just continues to get better and better. But that's why if you want to play with the best in practice and compete against the best on Thursday, Sundays, and Mondays and coach against the best, it's the league you come to.
But that is the norm. And I mean, I know people think outside of the SEC that we make this stuff up. But we had your colleague, the baseball coach over here. He's got the same deal.
Yeah.
Baseball is probably even more untenable than even basketball. Football speaks for itself. But as a coach, you're trying to win. You're trying to compete. You're trying to get the best players. But every game, I hate to use the phrase a war, but it is.
It is. It absolutely is. But again, if you're a competitor and blood runs through your veins, it's what you want. You want to say that you competed against the best. It's what sharpens your toolbox and gets you prepared for whatever you're going to do as you transition into life, if that's a career playing basketball or just transitioning in your working responsibilities. It's what prepares you for that. I wouldn't be who I was if I didn't come through this league.
I know it's not it's maddening to think about. I'm sure. I mean, you must love it though, as a competitor. But to get to here though, what do you have to do?
You've got to continue. Number one, you've got to retain the student athletes on your roster. And then you've got to be very intentional in terms of who you bring into your program. Because I think that's what makes the chemistry, and that's what gets everybody marching in the right way and on the same page. And so you've got to just be – intentionality is the word we use a lot in our program, and it's what makes or breaks the success you have.
Joni, it's always a pleasure to see you. We really appreciate it. We look forward to talking to you in a couple weeks as media days and the season begins. So all the very best.
Thank you.
Coach Joni Taylor from Texas A&M, as we are live one more hour in Aggieland.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.